Well, I want to tell you about our friends at Public Rec. You've heard me talk about them before. These guys figured it out. They figured out how to give you a sweatpant that looks like a slack, that doesn't have the annoying shallow pockets. Literally, there are deep pockets in the front. There's a wallet pocket in the back. You could wear these pants anywhere. You could wear them to a wedding. You could wear them to bed. I love these things. I wear them all the time. And I don't know about you, but my wardrobe changed a little bit during COVID-19. I was wearing sweats a little more than I was comfortable. And I'll tell you what, with Public Rec pants, I don't feel like I'm wearing sweats. I feel like I'm dressed for the day. They make leisure wear in waist and inseam sizes that make them fit just right and extra super comfortable. My favorite pants are their best-selling all-day, everyday pants, and they live up to their name. You can wear them all day, every day, no matter what you're doing. They're great for lounging at home. They look great for work. It seems impossible, doesn't it? But not only do they look great for work, but they're functional. You've got pockets that work. They're breathable, stretchy, moisture-wicking fabric. Again, they look brand new at all times. I spilled coffee on mine last night, and I thought, oh, my favorite Public Rec pants. And guess what? It came right out. So I was saved. And now you can get your whole wardrobe from Public Rec. They have comfortable shorts, T-shirts, polos, hoodies, jackets, even golf gear. And Public Rec rarely discounts, but right now they have an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Go to Public Rec. That's right. PublicRec.com/Drew. Use promo code Drew to receive 10% off. That is Public Rec. Again, use our promo code Drew, PublicRec.com, promo code Drew for 10% off. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Very special day. My friend Jim Jeffrey is coming on.
G'day, mate. Thanks for having me.
The new stand-up special is Intolerant. It is available now on Netflix. It's a fourth Netflix special. It was a big night at the Wilbur Theater in Boston.
Yeah.
Podcast. You still doing it?
I still do the podcast. Right. The podcast is going well. Yeah.
Good. It's available everywhere. Jay Leno was on with you recently, I guess, they're telling me.
Jay Leno came on the show. Each episode we do, we have a specialist on a subject. And so, today's episode was about James Bond. We did a Coca-Cola episode.
Oh, that's
interesting. We did a vaccine episode. And what happens...
Oh, that's very cool.
Beginning of the episode, yeah. I say everything that I think I know about the particular subject, and then a specialist corrects me on everything.
Right.
Basically, I'm...
We got to come to an alcoholism lecture.
Let's do that. Well, we did one on alcohol. That was the only one we did without a specialist. We just had
some years cast,
but alcoholism is a different thing. But anyway,
we'll do addiction.
The premise of the podcast is basically, you know, when you're in a bar and you used to have that guy that just knew everything, or that relative that would always correct you, and then the internet came in, you found out that person was a fucking moron.
Yes,
right. Yeah. And then you're like, no, that's not true at all.
Right.
So I'm trying to be the guy who knows about everything before the internet. So I can't do any research. I don't know the topic before I came in.
Yeah.
Also, it means very little prep work for me on the podcast.
All that training and musical comedy and comes to bear.
Yeah. I know a few things about a few things. Right. So Jay Leno came on, and he was, his specialty was cars, and you know, like, he hasn't got a doctorate in cars
but he knows cars.
He knew more than any other specialist we had on anything, right? Yeah. Like you would go, well, the first car was invented by blah blah blah, and then like you'd look on the internet and you go, no, I think you're wrong there, Jay. And then you dig a little deeper and you go, oh, no, actually, he's right. Like the T-Model 4, he goes, no, it was the Oldsmobile, was before the T-Model 4 and the thing. And he's a very, very clever guy when it comes to cars.
And so he and Corolla hang out all the time and geek out about cars.
Oh,
steam engine car.
He was so sweet. My father was in town and, you know, it's like when you have – a relative. When you have an elderly person staying in your house, it's the same as when you have a kid staying in your house. You have to find them activities.
Yes.
Right?
And you want to impress them.
Yeah,
them
you want to
time.
Impress them. And it's like, I've already taken him to comedy shows and all that type of stuff. And I was like, what will I do? So I ring Jay Leno up and go, can I bring my dad over to look at your cars?
Right? He lets that happen a lot.
And Jay was like, yeah,
and he'll take you all through it.
And he walked us through the whole time. And
what's wrong with people that don't like Jay Leno?
People are assholes.
Is that what it's
down like?
To?
It's like I like Conan. I like Conan a lot.
He's awesome,
right? I think Conan's awesome. I've done his show plenty of times. I think he's a great guy.
Super bright.
I've never met David Letterman. I think he's a really funny guy. I think he was a great. it's all these people's careers worked out fine. I just feel like Jay was the bloke that was sometimes in the middle of other executives' decisions. It wasn't Jay going, take away Conan and bring him back. It was someone at NBC who went, oh, okay, we have to fit in.
Well, somehow Stern keeps taking off after him, which always surprises me. I'm like,
I don't know what the Stern thing. I think Stern just probably, you know, I don't think David Letterman gives a fuck.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't think he gives a fuck. Yeah. David Letterman's fixing up houses and growing beards, man. It's like it all worked out for him just fine.
Right.
Everything worked out just fine.
It'd be hard
fine.
To ruffle their feathers. What do they care? So you mentioned before the Mike CW, we were talking about your first experience at the Nokia Theater. And it's funny when you said that, as soon as you say, so Jim moved here when? To Los Angeles?
Oh, I think I've been full-time in America at least 10 years. And I think I was coming back and forth for the first 3 years. All so right. Maybe 13 years.
So you were talking about your first Nokia Theater, which is a big theater here in Los Angeles, comedy special. I went to one where we were backstage with your whole cast from Legit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just that stayed with me because it was – all the people with developmental issues and everybody. What's his name? What's the kid's name?
Nick Daly. Nick Daly, who played Rodney.
Yeah, he was back there. His mom was back there.
I still talk to him every now and again on the phone. Me, DJ, and Dan are still very close. We're thinking of doing a podcast. You know how like they have the office lady ones where they talk about the office and they go through each other, and Scrubs does one. And I know that the show wasn't that big, but it's got a little fan base. And I don't care if only 100 people listen, but the three of us are going to do a podcast together where we go over each episode and we talk about what happened. And
Ginger in there too.
Yeah, well, we'll have Ginger come on and Sonia Eddy and different people, and Mindy Sterling will come, and you know, maybe we could even get John Ratzenberg in, my old boy John,
And how about the actress from Australia that played your mom?
Oh, Magnus Zabanski. Yeah. She's in trouble now. She's in trouble, not in trouble. She did a, because Kat and Kim,
you turned us on to. We watched the whole Australian, I think we saw on Netflix or something.
It's on Netflix. She plays Sharon and Kath and Kim, and it's a very popular show in Australia. And so she reprised her character of Sharon and came on and told everyone to wear masks, right? And so now the people are like, you government shill. And they're fat shaming her. But she was always a big lady, but it's like,
She was such a genius.
You see people for 10 years. She hadn't been on TV for 10 years. So they're really going after her on the internet. And she's a very nice lady.
Well, and you know, when I hear that, what I hear is, the Australian government overreached. I don't hear that Sharon, is that her name? What was her real name?
Magnus.
That Magnus did something wrong. It's like, because it's happening in California here too. They've overreached here. And all the mask pushback is all, stay out of, get away from me. And why they draw the line at the mask, I don't know. That's stupid.
What do you mean? The government is asking us too much to wear masks?
No.
I'm a mask fan.
Me too. I've had 100%. I'm 100% mask person.
Yeah.
I'm a mask maven, I call myself. But know that the lockdowns have been overly aggressive. They've overreached with the lockdowns.
Right.
And so people start pushing back, and the mask becomes the symbol of the pushback. The exact wrong thing. The easiest thing in the world, put the goddamn mask on.
The mask is very simple. I booked a restaurant for me and some friends, and they said you can only have – it was six of us, and they said you can have – four at a table and two at another one. And you're like, but we all walked in together. And those draconian things, you feel like we're going to be hanging out afterwards. It seems a bit.
Exactly. And that's the stuff you go, fuck it. And by the way, it's only California. How come it's okay in Nashville?
You watch the basketball, though, they're all living in the bubble in Orlando. Yeah. They're all living there. And then it's like, so the players are all sweating and pushing against each other.
Yeah.
And then, like, the people who work for the team are all sitting in the sideline in masks. They're all in the bubble as well.
Yeah. And there's visitors allowed.
Is there?
That's what I'm hearing.
I heard they got 10 people each.
Yeah.
And you have to have known the girl for a while. It can't just be like I met her on Tinder. You gotta show
what's
text.
A while in NBA
league. You gotta show text where you've had sex with her at least four times previously, and then she can come in. I heard stories of them sneaking them dressed up as men, like trench coat style.
That was in the NFL. A Seahawks player got busted having a girl put on a bunch of equipment and Seahawks uniform stuff and tried to sneak her in. Oh,
really?
Unsigned rookie free agent. He was fired.
He's fired? Does he get back in the league, or is that him done
depends
forever?
Depends how good he is.
His signing bonus was $2,500. He was a long shot to make the team. He's done forever.
Idiot.
So Nokia that night, I just was so struck by the – well, first of all, I think the I'm a huge fan of Legit. I just thought it was an important show, the way you did it.
You were on it.
I was on it, but well before that, it caught my attention as the way you were incorporating Rodney and his peers into the thing was exceptional. It's never been done as well in media, in my humble opinion.
I don't know if there's been a show that's had that many people with disabilities.
But you didn't. But it wasn't about their disability.
It was very organic. We didn't set out to do that. It was a very organic thing, and we never really mentioned the disability. They just had to populate the world because we had one central character who was disabled.
Exactly.
So we had, and when they're in a home, they've got to have people who are also in the home. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there was an agency who just took care of disabled actors or people with mental disabilities or physical disabilities, and they used to have an actor on the set who had the disability. They also had to have a carer with them that came out, you know, union rules or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was one episode where we needed like. We're in the home. We need like 30 extras with disabilities.
I remember.
And so we rang up the agency and we went, how many have you got? Right? And they go, 28 people. And I said, we'll take them all. We'll take everyone. We'll take everyone today. Right? And they go, but we only have 3 carers. And we just lied to the unions and went, oh, no, we've got all the people. And so,
we're fine.
Yeah. And we weren't prepared. We didn't have enough people to take care of everyone. But it was all right. It was a good couple of days.
And so in Legit, if you've not done it, is it on,
It's on Hulu. Yeah.
Go watch. It's important viewing and hysterical. And Dan was – I didn't really know – I don't think I know Dan before that. And he was so great as the alcoholic. He just nailed that.
Well, Dan became the reason he became an alcoholic was because at the end of season one, there was an episode where the guy in the wheelchair got – it all happened because my girlfriend at the time was pregnant, right? She's still the mother of my child to this day and we're still best buddies. But Kate was pregnant and so I thought we'll use that. And so we wrote into the episode that Kate would come back – and she got impregnated from the first episode when we went to the brothel, right?
Yes.
And so
for DJ,
yeah. So we bring her back, and then sometimes when you're writing, we only had a very skeleton cast, you know. But sometimes you write and you got a big story, but you got to write storylines for everyone. Like I'm sure in Friends, there were the writers used to get together and go, Joey's doing nothing this episode. We have to find something for him to do.
I'm sure.
And Dan was just sort of in the background, you know. And Dan comes up to me and goes, I don't have a lot to do in this episode. And I said, yeah, sorry about that. I'm, you know, but he was always standing next to me in each scene and doing everything that I was doing with me, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, I think I'm just going to get drunk at this party and cause a scene, be an asshole, right? And I said, yeah, do that, right? And he was so good at doing that. Then we went to the writer's room for season two. The first thing we said is Steve's character becomes an alcoholic.
he's too good at it.
Yeah, before that, we were like, yeah, he has an alcohol problem. And then he lost his child, and got very sad for him.
No, but it was good. It was a great – it was accurate. I always like it when it's accurate.
Yeah.
And Dan nailed it. You nailed it. The writing, it just was.
Yeah,
that's how it goes down.
It got very sad, and then the ex-wife moved away, and then he had an episode where he bought her a jacket, and the kid had grown, and it didn't fit him anymore. And then he got off it for a bit, and he got onto it for a bit, and we had a whole season storyline where he was sobering up and fell off the wagon again for the next season.
Yeah,
I have a couple of episodes of season three written. I think if I do this podcast, I might we might do them as radio plays. Just
awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
People would love it because it still has a very strong following.
Yeah, it's one of Brad Pitt's favorite TV shows.
See?
There you go.
See?
That's that. if I knew that while I was on the air, we could have kept it on, maybe.
back to DJ. When we were backstage at that Nokia event, somehow I was already giving him some shit about being in the wheelchair and him looking more disabled than some of the disabled people. And then he went, oh, yeah, well, I had cancer when I was 14. I was like, oh, Jesus, come on.
He had cancer when he was young and his bones grew long and not wide or something like that. But, you know, he had cancer a lot as a kid. He had it like a few times, I think. I think it came back and forth. And
yes,
stuff.
I felt
but
horrible.
DJ had a DJ
Qualls, we're talking about.
DJ Qualls, he came out as, well, he came out of the closet. Like his friends, we all knew. but he came out publicly at one of my shows.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I was performing, I think I was in San Diego, and I was on stage, and I was telling a story, and DJ was just we were just hanging out that weekend, and DJ was standing in the wings, and I told the story, and this is what happened. Me and DJ went to see Elton John, right? Mm. And we're seeing Elton John, and I'm going to have to use the F derogatory word here, but I'm using it in context, okay. Right? So
Do not cancel Jim Jeffries for telling a story.
I'm telling a story.
It's a hateful, awful word he's going to use.
I'm going to use it in context, right? So anyway, me and DJ, we're sitting there watching Elton John now. Elton John is his final tour, and Elton John...
It's Las Vegas?
Yeah. No, we went and saw him in Anaheim, but he's on that Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour. Yep. And at about the 2 hour mark or something, just before he's about to do the encores, he gives a heartfelt speech where he sits there and he just went, I want to thank you all for coming to see me over these years. If it wasn't for you, these songs mean nothing if they weren't heard by you and appreciated by you. And thank you for all the love. And it's a beautiful speech. And I was always tearing up. And I was sitting there and it's like I've played very big theatre. I played arenas in Australia. You know, and I get up, I do my jokes and I get off and I've never... thank the audience. I'm thankful they're there, but I've never gone thank you. It feels a bit weird to do it, you know, and it's not my comfort zone. And I turned to DJ and I said, you know what, DJ, I should do that. I should every now and again, I should thank my audience because it does mean a lot to me that people show up to come and watch me tell jokes. It's amazing that people come to a theater and spend that night, you know. And DJ goes, yeah, but with your fan base, someone would just yell out fag like that, right?
Right, right.
And as he said that, Elton John had stopped talking. and it just resonated across the auditorium.
Oh, no.
Because Elton had just given this full heartfelt speech. And then DJ just goes, fag, like that, right? And I'm like, and we just sat there and went, oh, no.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, this would be a good time to come out. Just tell everyone, right? You know what I mean? Like, we sunk into our chair, right? Because, like, what must have gone through? Elton John heard it. He sort of turned around. Oh. Like what must have gone through Elton John's head? Like, he's had a 50-year career, right? He's sitting there in his farewell tour. Someone's bought a ticket. They've gone through 2 hours, and then they've yelled at it. It's like
must be a Jim Jeffries fan.
It must be someone who is sitting there and is going, hang on a minute, I've heard the albums, but I've never seen the outfits. You know what I mean? So I'm telling this story on stage in San Diego because it happened like a week earlier. And I said, oh... and I told the story, and I said a friend of mine who is gay, but he isn't out of the club. I didn't say who it was, you know, like that. And DJ, just something happened in him where he was just standing in the wing, and he walked out, and he was kind of shaking a little bit, and he just walked out, and he just sort of stared at me, and I went, "Hey, DJ," and he goes, "Can I have the microphone?" And I said, "Yeah," and he just, in that moment, in front of like 2,000 people, went, "I'm the friend. I'm gay. I've always been gay." Thank you. And he just came out, and then he just, before he could take it back or anything, he tweeted it. And then I came back, and he was just sitting in the dressing room going, I did it. It was quite a beautiful moment. It was quite beautiful.
He is one of the sweetest, nicest guys.
I think for him, maybe early on in his career, because he always played the virgin in sort of school movies, maybe thought that people wouldn't accept him like that.
Right.
And I know in that moment that a lot of people reached out to me and a lot of people reached out to him. I think he got a lot of love from that whole situation. I don't think there was a lot of backlash, but I don't know what time has done. Yeah,
and I just going through your cast a little bit. And by the way, speaking of cast, last time I talked to you, you were talking about casting. I guess the show you're working on right now, it's coming out soon. Called
Well,
Jeffries.
we were 1 week out of 6 days out of going into rehearsal, and then COVID happened.
That's for this show,
for the new show.
Jeffries,
yeah,
it's coming out.
Well, it still hasn't been cancelled. It's still, but NBC had to put a hold on everything, and so we might be going into the next cycle. But they haven't cancelled it. No, but we cast the whole show and everything, and we were about to go in rehearsal. The sets were built. I'd never done a multicam. I used to walk onto the stage, and I was like, "Wow, that's my house and my thing." It was really exciting, and then just. Nothing. But I'm optimistic that you know, because the script was really good, the cast was really good. But you know, so we were casting. We cast Betsy Brandt from Breaking Bad. She was playing Kate, my ex.
Yep.
You know, and Kate, we called her a different character. But the premise of the show was basically the same as my life. I have an ex who lives down the road who I have a child with. And my dad moved in with me after my mother passed away, and I got my dad out of here basically just when COVID was starting to shut down. I said, "You better get out," and we moved him back to Australia before it got too bad here.
Betsy was the cop's wife.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. And she played Michael J. Fox's wife in his sitcom, and
yeah,
the new one.
I think I did a game show with her, 25 Words or Less. Was that Betsy in there with me?
Yeah, she's a very nice lady.
Very, if that's what I'm thinking of, very nice. But you said something that actually stayed with me. You went, you were casting, and you were shocked at how extremely established actresses, you mentioned Jennifer Goodwin, for instance, had to come in and audition for you. And you're like, I thought she just submitted her.
There was a load of actors and actresses that it was. It's a tough fucking business.
But
man.
Isn't that crazy?
Those people still work. But
it's weird that they have that's so established.
I believe that people have this image of actors that if you're on things all the time, people just ring up, got a role for you, and I don't think I've ever been. The only things that I get offered are shows that I write myself, you know, and I'm terrible at auditions, I think the problem with me is I go in for auditions and they're expecting what I do on stage to be the persona, which I'm completely fine with that persona, but then it's like, and do it in an American accent. And you're like, well,
use the C word less.
there goes my whole timing out the window, you know. I had an audition the other day, I think, for the first time in forever, and it was like, they said, do it in your natural accent, a British accent, and an American accent. And I'm like,
nope, I'm out.
I did the British one, the Australian, and then I went, all right, that's and I'll give the go at the American one. But I can't do much nuance in an American accent.
Do you mind? I'm not sure I can even think in my mind the difference between Australia. I know when I hear it, but I can't differentiate whether I could produce it.
When I do an American accent, Australian it looks weird.
And British. Those are the two that I would have trouble.
Oh, it's different between Australian and British.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very. It depends what type of British person you're doing.
Right.
You know,
if you're doing
like a Cockney sort of fella, you know what I mean. You just do a Jason Stratham, you make it hard as fuck. You know, you know, you just do that one. I think you'll think you've made a mistake there, my son. Right. You do that one. Right. That's the easy one, and then you just do the Hugh Grant sort of, you know, blithering idiot sort of voice is the other one that you do. But there's so many regional accents in that, like the Newcastle one, the Liverpool one, like the Liverpool accent.
The Beatles.
Well, see, this is the thing. The Beatles accent isn't the Liverpool accent now.
Oh, interesting.
The Beatles accent is the accent from the 1960s, and it's evolved since then. So the accent used to be like, all right there, John, I think we've had enough of this play now anymore. I think I'm going to go play the drums, right? That type of thing.
Yeah.
But now it's just a bit more chippy and just sort of, fucking hell, I don't know what you're talking about. Why even do that to me?
Oh,
right? It's this fucking, all right, calm down. What are you doing? What are you doing? It's like a different thing. And then Birmingham's like this depressing accent in the middle of the country where everything sounds really sad. You know, and that's where Ozzy Osbourne comes from.
Oh, interesting.
Everyone thinks that Ozzy Osbourne's voice is affected by drugs. He's just from Birmingham.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Really what it is. Yeah, yeah.
It's so fascinating. And we don't tune into those differences.
You can have accents 50 miles apart, and they're completely different. Liverpool to Manchester is 50 miles.
Yeah.
And so Liverpool and then...
Well, parts of London are different.
Well, parts of London, north and south London, and then going up to like Newcastle is... I can't even understand. They're on the border of Scotland, and they're a really sort of... Dear number five. Dear number five in the Big Brother house. Oh, why, Pet? I don't know. I don't know what you're doing to me right now.
So it's heading towards Scottish, approximately.
Yeah, it's really on the cusp. But that's like quite a cute accent, that one.
And so the casting, though, you saw lots of important actors and actresses.
Oh, so a lot of important actors.
Yeah.
Casting my father was the only bit that we were sending out offers for people. Because my father was like, originally we had a few, we like to play my dad. I suggested we got Anthony LaPaglia at the end, who's an Emmy award winning. He's won Tony Award. He's like a real, real actor. Me and him have become friends in COVID, where we sort of hung out because we started getting rehearsal, and comes over to my house and we have a couple of edibles and watch TV. You know, and
I want to do that.
Yeah, yeah, you can do that. Yeah, yeah. And then we had, but originally the MEC go, they go, so who could play your dad? And my first suggestion, I went, Mel Gibson, because I thought that'll get a bit of press, and he's never been in a multicam sitcom. You can say what you want about the guy; he can fucking act, right? And he was, and it's like I don't.
Did you test him? Did you catch?
No, I got a solid no on that one. That was just a suggestion I made. I went, what about Mel Gibson? And then it's like, no, we're not.
Just that you got Magda. Is that her name?
Magda, yeah, Magda.
I mean, that was a big cat.
Yeah, look, I'm like Oscar Schindler when it comes to Australian comedians. I keep on bringing them over and keeping them in the country. Yeah.
Is she here now?
No. She came over for a little bit, and she, you know. But
we watched the whole run of Kath and Kim.
My girlfriend's obsessed with Kath and Kim. She's obsessed with it.
Well, we were too. We watched. Well,
have you ever seen the American remake?
Oh yeah! Not only that, the guy that played the hot dog stand owner is a friend of mine. And I'm blanking on his name.
He played the sandwich show. And he's out of Best in Show and all that.
Yes. Went to college with him.
Ah, right. Well, he's a very funny guy. He couldn't get the speed walk right. He couldn't get the hit.
I thought that was a brilliant brand. And Selma Hayek, is that her name?
I thought it was terrible.
It was its own thing. You thought it was terrible because you were thinking about the other show.
Because the actresses are meant to be the same age, but we're meant to imagine that one's younger and one's older, and that you have to suspend belief when you watch Kath and Kim. And then they actually cast them what they would probably look like rather than
Craig Baker.
Nope.
No, not Craig Baker.
This is on Kath and Kim US with Selma Blair and what's her name from SNL? Shoot.
Molly Shannon. Molly Shannon.
I'm reading. There's a weird. So in the casting, it says the two characters have different first names. Craig Baker replacing Brett Craig and Phil Knight replacing Kel Knight.
Yeah, Phil Knight. Yeah, Phil Knight character. And I auditioned for American Kath and Kim. That's how I know I was in the country. I was in the country about a week, and the part went to the guy from SNL, Mikey something. What's his name? It doesn't matter.
John Michael Higgins.
That's what I was trying to think of. John Michael. So, I didn't get a chance to thank you thoroughly for my clue game.
Oh, have you played it?
Yes.
It's nice.
Repeatedly during the darkest hours of COVID, my son's pulled it out. And it's so inviting that we just had to do it. Repeatedly.
I got you a deluxe edition of Clue.
It was.
That's what I've been doing in COVID, is buying people board games.
It was, I must tell you, an important piece of surviving COVID.
Yeah,
Thank you for that.
We call it Clue Dough for some reason in the rest of the room. You call it Clue in America. Everyone else calls it Clue Dough.
Clue Dough or something?
It's got an O on the end. I don't know why. You're probably right and we're probably wrong, but there's things like I don't call it, you call it just Lego.
Yeah.
I call it Legos because there's lots of them.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Legos. I get that.
And so Legos, we don't call them Lego. There's multiple Lego.
This is a legit thing. This isn't some sort of slang. It's called Cluedo. That's how it's branded in the rest of the world.
In the rest of the world, it's called Cluedo.
I see. I'm wondering if it's a take off Clouseau, like off the Inspector Clouseau.
No, I think it's before. I think it's an older game. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe that's where Clouseau came from Cluedo.
But we call it Cluedo. I'll tell you other stupid things.
It's a play on Clue and Ludo, which is Latin for I play.
Oh, gosh.
Cluedo. That's probably the original, and then you guys called it Clue.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Okay, so the movie Mighty Ducks in Australia, for whatever reason, is called Champions. they thought the term Mighty Ducks seemed stupid. And at the end of the movie, they play We're the Champions by Queen. And so someone just, I'll just call it Champions. And like Harold and Kumar go to White Castle because we don't have White Castles called Harold and Kumar Get the Munchies. It's like, I always think with these things, we'll figure it out. Just leave it as the name. We'll figure out that White Castle's the thing. It's not like people are going, well, I'm not going to go to that movie.
Let's talk about your friend Ginger for a second.
Yeah, Gonzaga. She's got a lovely little puppy. I keep watching on the internet.
I know she's obsessed with it. Ginger is one of the smartest humans I know, and hides it very carefully.
I don't think she hides it. She's pretty smart.
She reads law books for pastime.
Like, yeah, she's one of those people that she's very, you know. My son had a play date with a kid the other day who came over the house who he's known since he's been about three. And I said, he's a lovely kid. He's a lovely kid. And I go to him, I go, what do you want to do, mate? What do you want to do? Like, they're playing. Because this weird thing about kids, they come over and play at your house, and they come up to me and they go, what should we do now?
Yeah, right.
I never remember asking my dad what the fuck we should do.
Yeah.
My dad would go, what are you talking?
You wouldn't even come inside to interact with the adults.
No, no.
You'd be out.
No, no, no. But also, it's like we have a Nerf gun fight. Like, you going to play Nerf gun fight? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't remember my dad fucking pew, pew with me. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, my dad was on the fucking roof. You know what I mean? So this kid comes up to me and he goes, what are we going to do now? They'd finish playing whatever game
That's
they
what
were
you
playing.
Tell.
And I went, what do you like doing? And he goes, I like reading.
Oh, my.
And I went, well, you can't come over to my house and fucking read.
Do you want to watch TV?
Yeah.
Eat edibles?
Yeah, this is a TV house, mate. You're not picking up any books to read.
In fact, last time I saw Dan Bakadal, I was watching TV in your house. Watching football.
Were we watching the Super Bowl or something?
It was your citizen party. Jim's a citizen of the United States.
Yeah, I'm
now.
A citizen of the United States. Yeah, Bakadal's my. Sometimes I ring him and he does that. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm pretty upset about the Vikings losing, blah, blah. And I don't know anything about American football. I'm a baseball guy, and I'm going to watch the Clippers tonight because, you know, it's the biggest game in Clipper history, and I go to a few Clipper games. The only reason I support, my dad comes over, my dad thinks that I have, because I followed a rugby league team in Australia called the North Sydney Bears who never won in 100 years, not once. Never won, right? I've never supported a team that within the time that I've been supporting them, they've won anything. Like, I've been supporting the Dodgers since 2000, and they haven't won shit.
Well, they've been pretty good, though.
They've been brilliant.
Yeah, they just haven't taken it home.
But I support lose, and my dad went, he goes, I go take you to the basketball, and he goes, oh, the Lakers, because he's heard about them. I said, no, the Clippers. Who are the Clippers?
Oh, wow.
And I said, the thing, he goes, why do you always support losers? And I go, well, the thing is, when I moved here, I had no money, and the Laker tickets were like $150, and the Clippers were like 30, so that's how the decision was made, right? You know, it was a monetary thing. And so it's nice now that they have good players, but I'll speak to the Dodgers winning, because they won the division in the time I've been here at least 10 or 12 times, right? They win it all the time. I think it's been 7 in a row or something.
Didn't they get kicked out by the Padres last night or a couple days ago?
Last night, the Padres kicked out. They're playing the Padres again today. But here's the thing. I'm not – if they win the division and they start spraying each other with champagne and fucking goggles, I'm fucking over it. Win the World Series and then you can spray each other with champagne. You win the division every fucking year.
Yes.
Just
stop
win the
teasing us.
And it's also what a baller move that would be if you won the division and then just dropped your bat and you casually walk back into the dressing room like the job's not done. But it's this too much celebration in the season's long and all that type of stuff. No, I'm a curmudgeon-y little fuck.
I'm like
fucking Steel. Be like Steel. Go out there. Wait until you win the World Series and then call me. Because I went to those two World Series and that was heartbreaking. And the fucking Houston cheated. Don't get me started. I know this isn't a sports show.
For me, this is just my chance to hang out with you. I rarely get a chance to do it.
You can come over to my house whenever you want. All right. You want to come watch the Clippers after
only
this?
If I get edibles.
Yeah, we'll have edibles there. Yeah, we'll have edibles. But I gained a bit of COVID weight, so I'm trying not to have.
You're in good shape.
I gained 20 and I've lost 8 back. Okay, you know what I mean? Okay. So, but I'm trying to not eat the edibles because I eat everything in the house.
Yeah, I get it.
And I love it. I love it. It's like I know I'm getting fat and I'm just having such a good time and I don't drink booze with it or anything like that. And
what brand of edibles? You know, you do sativa
I do indica. And I eat gummies and I normally have 20 milligrams and that's sort of my sort of level. And I enjoy it
How long does that last for?
4 hours.
Yeah.
I enjoy it more than alcohol now. So it's actually been a thing that's come into my life that has actually made me healthier.
Interesting.
Because
you drink less.
I drink 90% less.
Well, interesting.
Because I don't you know, I enjoy that just as much. But if I go to Vegas or something like that, I still have a drink because you go into a bar. But with the whole, I don't drink it. I'm not going to drink at home, but I'll have edibles at home, and yeah. You know what I mean. So makes it's sense. Like it's less social. It's less. So I had a friend come over, and you know, you don't socialize well on edibles, you know. unless they're on edibles as well. Right. Otherwise, you're on two different playing fields. I do that, and I like mushrooms, and that's sort of me done these days. You know, there's no hard drugs anymore. Those days are long gone.
Did you go to Las Vegas during the corona lockdown?
No, but I am going next week. But in
performing?
I've got another thing I'm going to do there. I've got a private plane. I'm going out there and
We went out there. My wife and I went there a month or so ago, 6 weeks ago, something like that. It was great.
Yeah, I hear it's empty.
It was not empty.
No,
it was moderately busy. The strip is empty.
Right,
the hotels are moderately empty.
And how did they put you in? Okay, I don't understand. So I know they put you in cubicles.
Some of them, like you go to like Bellagio has what looks like bank teller sort of. Series of cubicles around the table, right?
But what difference does it make if you're touching chips?
I maybe they put UV light over it or something. I don't know. Because
the chips get handed in and then the chips get moved and the other things. You're still touching chips.
Well, I will tell you that the way we're thinking about COVID now, we're less concerned about hands and things that are touching.
Right.
Because it really is going in the air on droplets.
Okay.
And so this is protecting the droplets. But if you go quarter mile up the strip to Caesars, nothing. It's just on. It's just shoulder to shoulder.
Right.
I mean, no barriers, no nothing.
Right.
At least when we were there. That was shocking to me that, you know, some places are fastidiously being carried. There's, you know, things to wash your hands everywhere and all this kind of stuff. And you go to Caesar and it's like, no, we're just gambling. It's here. It's on.
Yeah, I enjoy a gamble.
Gary, you were trying to say something?
No, I was – sorry, no.
Okay. It was nice to get away. I swear, the not traveling during this whole thing is like really driving me insane.
Yeah, I've done a couple. You know, I've been trying to. I took my kids to Lake Tahoe, and so we could have like a little family thing. And this is the first time getting on a plane, but I'm getting on a private plane. It's for a friend's thing. But
planes, look, I've been across country on planes. I've been all over the place. And you talk to the flight attendants, the pilots, like, none of us are getting sick.
Right.
Nobody gets sick on planes.
I don't know. It feels like the air conditioning. It's all circulating.
You would think. But apparently the way they're treating it, the way they
Feel like now with the smoke in the air. I woke up this morning and I felt like I'd smoked a packet of cigarettes.
I know. We're talking about the fires here. It's just – why is it so bad in Glendale? It got worse as I came
it's
over here.
It's got worse today.
Worse as I went away from the fire. I'm closer to the fire than you guys are here in the studio, and this was worse.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but it's absolutely brutal at the studio.
Yeah.
It's been weird. It's been very tough here.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like this is only one-tenth of what Australia had in January. Do you remember that? Australia was on fire, and we thought that was the worst thing that would happen in 2020.
Right.
And I was doing charity gigs all over town for this. And it's like, when I finished doing stand-up, my last real show I did of stand-up was in February. And my first 20 minutes was about how the koalas were dying in Australia and doing stuff about bushfires. And now it's like, I can't do that material. That material.
Isn't that weird? There has been people's hair have caught on fire for so many different things.
Mm.
Not to keep the fire imagery going here, but it literally. I mean, you can't remember what was happening 3 weeks ago.
No,
there's been so much stuff.
Just across
the Trump administration, it feels like that where people have been upset about so much all the time.
Well, I stopped watching the news and that. I know where I'm going to vote, and I'm just like I can't. I'll watch the debates. The debates are going to be good telly, as long as they're allowed in the same room.
I love the idea that Rogan does it for 4 hours. Whatever,
never happened.
It'd be fantastic.
It'd be amazing.
Oh,
but I agree with Jim. The debates are going to be great television.
Yeah.
Whether you're looking to have your mind changed or not, they're going to be.
Did you see the thing that was circulating, the video of Biden on The View where he started having real trouble like expressing himself? I'm like, oh my god, if that happens during debate, it's like, oh
yeah. If there is a chance, and I know that Kamala Harris could be our president.
Yep.
And I'm happy about that. I like her. I think she's a solid person. So, you know, but is Biden a little old? But Trump's fucking old. I reckon there should be a cutoff age. I don't think you should be able to be president after 70.
Well, these days, 70 is fairly young for people, but I would certainly a cutoff like 76 would make sense to me.
My dad's 78, and I wouldn't want him in charge of fuck all. You know what I mean? Like, and about 15 years ago, I would have, you know what I mean? But yeah. Like, he's more. My dad's getting more and more set in his way. Like, not just because your brain runs out. You can't change.
Yeah, you become
you
more
aren't
rigid.
Open to fucking change once you hit about 70. You're just not.
I'm not sure the brain can do it.
Yeah, I don't think the brain can do it. You're just set in your ways. Yeah. And once you're set in your ways, you're fucking set in your ways. And I think under that, you can still go, okay, I can see your point of view. I can see this point of view. And let's meet in the middle somewhere. But I don't think there's any meeting in the middle for old people.
You told me a story once. I don't know if you can tell it or if you have told it publicly, but
right.
About Russell Crowe when you went to first visit him after you met him.
No, I don't know. I can't tell it.
Oh,
tell
such
it,
a good story. Anyway, it was fun. Yes, it was a good time.
Yeah, I can't tell you that one. I've got a few of those.
But I think we can't talk about this one thing, though, is that he lives on this incredible compound.
I was talking about this with my friend recently. Has there been a bigger swing from the hottest leading man in Hollywood to – what he looks like today?
Oh, I haven't seen him lately.
Russ is one of me good friends, so I'm not going to comment on this. But Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. That's a good one.
He did okay. Pulled up some pretty interesting characters late in life.
The one that I was thinking of, and a lot of this could have been prosthetics, was there was a Showtime series recently where he
played
Dodger.
Oh, no, that was 100% prosthetics.
No,
100. I saw him in...
Talking about the Fox News thing.
Yeah.
I saw him in New York when he was doing that. He came out and saw my show, and he was covered in... Yeah, he was hours and hours in the makeup chair.
He, by the way, did a brilliant job of that. And I heard he felt defensive about Roger Ailes. He was able to portray his shittiness, but that he was sort of defending the person in a way.
I don't know. I haven't spoken to him on that, but yeah, I remember when he was doing that, and it was like he just sent me a photo one that, like, I think he had prosthetics everywhere, because I think he sent me a photo of just a fat hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that's the level of how these things were. They had it all over his body.
He did such a good job. So
these
great.
Things, and I'm looking forward to his movie, the one where he's unhinged, or is it?
Yeah, I think it is called Unhinged.
Yeah, it's basically Fallout. It's like Road Rage.
It's
the
Road
movie.
Rage for 2 hours. It looks amazing. Yeah. It looks really cool.
Yeah. No, I think that's going to be a good film. But I couldn't get out to the cinema to see it. So hopefully it will come out in the. You know, I'm enjoying these movies just being released. Like, my brother went to see Bill and Ted's in the cinema, and I don't know if I would have been committed enough to do that, but yeah. I was very happy to buy it on the day.
Yeah.
I hope they keep that up. The option to buy it at home. I mean,
are the movies making as much profit? Did Mulan?
No, they're not.
They're not. No. Okay, because we've been buying every new movie.
Yeah,
we bought Mulan the day.
I saw it was like way. They needed it literally 10 times.
But Mulan was a one that they did that it had a different barrier to entry than all the other ones.
In terms of expense,
they made you subscribe to Disney Plus first.
Right.
Then you had to buy it, and there was no rental option. Whereas Trolls, which was a more of a kids movie, apparently did very, very well because it was dead in the middle of COVID, and a lot of parents, there was only a rental option.
You know why Trolls did well? It came out on Easter Saturday.
Mm. Yeah.
And then every single one of us, after we did the egg hunt, went, want to do Trolls? Well, I did it. Everyone I knew did Trolls that day.
Did you rent it just the once? Because I heard a lot of parents whose kids were freaking out, so they would rent it 2 or 3 times over the course of that week.
Oh, well, that's maybe true. No, my son just watched it the once, and he got what was going on with Trolls.
in terms of how Mulan was bought, wasn't Hamilton exactly the same? And didn't they think that would have the same?
No, because Hamilton was free. Hamilton just came with Disney Plus.
Oh,
if you had Disney Plus, you got it for free.
I see.
But I didn't like Mulan. I thought it sucked. No kidding. Yeah.
It looks beautiful. I mean,
it looked beautiful. Okay, you're missing the Eddie Murphy dragon, right? Who was like the second or third lead in the whole thing. So you're missing a whole lead character. The songs in Mulan are really good songs.
Yeah.
And so the songs. And I just thought the actress was a bit. I just think she just was. I didn't give a fuck.
So
you know how like sometimes
songs,
you watch an actor and you give a fuck about people, even if they. I didn't give a fuck about her.
So Adam and I have been obsessing watching Love Boat the last couple months.
You've been watching the original Love Boat?
The original Love Boat, because it's such an anthropological time capsule.
Right.
Right? It's like you. It's like watching a car crash. Like, people thought this was funny, and what the fuck? Like, what? The writing is so shitty, and it's just, you can't believe it. But all these really giants from the 40s and 50s kind of walk through.
As oh, they have all the old stars. And then there's like episodes where there's like a young Tom Hanks and there's
all this kind of stuff and Donnie Osmond. But they had – this is what I brought it up. And this you might find this interesting with your musical background. Phil Harris came on.
Right.
Do you know who Phil Harris is?
No.
Baloo from the Jungle Book.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so I went down a rabbit hole watching all his old stuff. Guy was kind of a genius. Then I started thinking about the Jungle Book, and I'm like, my God, they took all these great old jazz, all these white dudes, which jumps out at you. It's like only white guys got the part. Now I'm going to blank the name of the guy that played the big orangutan.
Doobie-doo, I want to be like you.
Who's even more famous than Phil Harris. But all these – you're going to tell me, Gary, who that is. All these guys' performances are all out there on YouTube in like Ed Sullivan shows and things. It's really fascinating to watch. I mean, they're like little time capsules.
Yeah, everything's out there.
But they're
– Louis Prima?
Louis Prima. But they're – kind of geniuses were watching. You know what I mean? Because there was a reason they had the staying power they did.
What do you mean they're kind of geniuses? Because
there's a quality they have that I'm not used to seeing. I'm not sure what it was.
Musical theater guys or comics or what?
They were comics. They had a rhythm that I wasn't used to seeing. There was a patois, a banter to everything, and a story they were always telling with these things. I don't know. It just struck me as something interesting that we don't have anymore.
With my girlfriend, I always feel very old because I'm always like I just feel there's a generation of people and sort of maybe 35 and down, maybe even older, that they never saw. Okay, I saw everything as a kid because we only had four channels.
Right. We had three when I was a kid.
Yeah, we had four in Australia, and one of them was taken up by cricket all the time. You know what I mean? It's 5-day sport, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to watch the midday movies, and I watched all the Mar and Park Kettles and the Abbott and Costellos and all that type of stuff. Yes. I watched all that crap, and I've seen every Shirley Temple movie.
Chillers, all the horror films were under.
I've seen all that stuff, right? And so because of that, I have an education in sort of old movies because that's the only thing that was on TV.
Yes.
I think what happened was once we had a channel that was four old movies, people stopped watching them.
Yeah.
And once kids had their own channel, Nickelodeon, not so it's like my girlfriend, I had to explain who Sammy Davis Jr. was.
Oh.
And I'm like, everyone knows who Sammy Davis Jr. He was very important. And then we watched a documentary on Sammy Davis Jr. I go, he's like, he was a black guy. They wouldn't let him perform in the same place. He wouldn't let him stay in the same place he was performing. He was Jewish. He lost an eye in a steering wheel accident. You know, he was Sinatra's best mate.
I do. I'm wondering if it's about what your parents exposed you to, because I'm exactly 35 and I haven't necessarily seen Sammy's work.
You're right at the cusp.
Yeah.
You're right where he gets lost. And by the way, the irony about the old movies is only people old watch old movies now.
Yeah, only people old watch old movies. Yeah. And you used to just stumble across one and all that type of stuff, but now you have so much to watch, you don't watch it. When you're forced to watch things, when there was three or four channels, you just watched what was on fucking telly and then you watch a whole lot of different genres. And my son doesn't have to wake up in the morning to watch a fucking cartoon.
Right.
He just watches cartoons when he wants to.
We used to have to wake up Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah. No, that was from my childhood. Yeah. But, I used to go to Blockbuster. That was a big event on Friday night.
Do you know the Blockbuster? a business guy I know told me a piece of business history that Blockbuster could have bought Netflix for $50 million.
Oh, yeah.
At one point. And they told them, Netflix, you don't have a business.
There's a great podcast series on, I think it's on Business Wars from Wondery, where they did Netflix versus Blockbuster. And the story is just wild.
It's insane.
Oh, so Blockbuster could have been the – because they tried to do that later on, like sending out the things, but they didn't have the algorithm and the thing.
Correct.
They
could have just bought Netflix. They were part of Viacom then or something? They're part of something bigger.
They had broken off. They were for a minute and then they had broken off and they tried to launch their own streaming service and their whole niche was – but when you're done with it, you don't have to mail it back and wait for the next one. You can go into the store and get the new one.
Right.
But then it didn't really work because the stores were inundated with all these DVDs. They didn't
need. Netflix quickly got rid of the mail back thing.
Right.
Yeah, well, the mail back thing, I think I still have a couple of DVDs I never mailed back.
Yeah.
I think I might even be paying a little bit extra to have the
– oh, that's still a thing. Matt Bondelier.
I'll tell you, so my last Netflix special came out and I was getting shitty with like – Like, I was turning on my Netflix and I was like, why is it not showing up on the home page? It's the new release on Netflix. Why am I not on the new page? Like this, right? Turns out, because my kid uses my account, my girlfriend uses my account, Netflix deemed my special to be something that I wouldn't enjoy.
Adam had problems with that, too. Where his documentaries wouldn't show up for him.
Yeah, they wouldn't show up on my feed. I'd have to search for myself. And then like other friends of mine are like, it's on my feed.
Well, you know what's interesting is that I wonder about this, about algorithms, both you know Facebook and Google and Netflix. I am so all over the place with everything. I feel like they can't figure me out. Because politically, I'm all over the place. Taste-wise, I'm all over the place. And so they try to send me stuff, and I'm like, oh, I know where that came from. It's like, not interested in that. That was just something I was looking at for a minute.
I think everyone thinks that, but I think they know you better than
– That's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. Because does the AI really get it or not?
I said something
that – Or they will if they don't.
Facebook advertised to me the other day. I was talking to my friend about how all these hot Nashville hot chicken places have opened up around town. There's like six or seven of them now.
Oh, right? At least.
Yeah, that's the big thing, hot chicken.
It's a big deal in Nashville, yeah.
But Nashville, in L.A.
No, yeah. LA's got, SoCal, yeah.
L.A.'s become hot chicken crazy, right?
Yeah, I get it.
And so I said that. I said, oh, there's this one 24-hour hot chicken up the road for me, and it's all right. And, you know, my girlfriend likes it because it has a vegan chicken one. And then I turned my phone on, and an hour later, it was advertising 24-hour hot chicken through my feed. And I've never typed it in. I've never typed it in.
Heard you, or Alexa heard you, or something.
Somebody. I don't have an Alexa in my house. Somebody fucking.
Oh, your phone's listening. Don't be naive.
Also, my phone. I bought this like truffle sauce that I like. This hot called truff sauce that was one of Oprah's favorite things. Right. I bought that, and I also bought a very expensive mustard. I'm a condiment guy. I get advertised so many fucking condiments. If there's an expensive condiment to be had, they're trying to sell it to me. There's another one, a Hon white truffle Asian mustard right now that they're just plugging to me nonstop until I fucking buy it. I'm going to buy it, I guess. I don't know.
I get that truff one advertised to me all the time, but it's not just the things that you would think about that are advertised as listening, like Alexa and stuff. The reason that you can get a 65-inch TV for $450 now is that the companies are subsidizing it because those have built-in microphones that are listening, and you have to be very careful when you're setting them up to opt out of that, and who knows if that even really works.
So I've been having a bit of an existential problem lately, personally.
Right.
This whole thing has depressed me, and I've just been really shitty about it. But in the course of my crisis, I've been thinking, like, God, if I were young and retraining again, I would definitely be an AI engineer. I would be like an electrical engineer, and I would focus on AI and stuff, because there would never be any – your job would be good forever. This is it, the future.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched that Netflix documentary on the
social,
on the
dilemma.
Social thing. Yeah, that really upset me.
Me too.
Really upset me. The 150% more likely to cut now, and just from 2011.
The kids?
Yeah.
Oh, 14-year-old females, watch out, man. It is bad. And it's not just that. There's a lot going on.
But it's also, it's like, I even watch my son now. It's like he was playing online with one of his friends, playing a video game. They got into a little argument, and bloody seven, one of his mates, he probably does it to them as well. He goes, oh, my friend blocked me.
Oh.
And I'm like, you're a fucking kid. What are you worrying about that? You know what I mean? They had a little argument.
But blocking, though, feels negating. That's like, I'm not, you don't exist to me.
It's a pretty dramatic move. But it's like at this age. Ah. And it's like, me and my brother were talking about it. And the thing about, so, you know.
The cop?
The other brother. So, I think everyone feels bullied. Bullied at one stage or another. I think maybe I was a bully to people and thought to myself that I was just protecting myself from them bullying me or whatever. And I think it's a vicious cycle that we're all just trying to take care of ourselves.
Well, young males, animals.
Yeah, and me and my brother were talking about this. It's like the good thing used to be is when summer came around, that happened over Christmas in Australia, you know, when summer came around, the school year ended, you got 3 months, 2.5 months off.
Yeah.
You got 2.5 months
away
off.
From the other kids.
Yeah, from the other kids. Yeah. You got away and your brain could even reset and go, maybe next year will be different.
Yeah.
You know, I can start fresh and all that type of stuff. But they never fucking leave you alone. You don't get the sanctuary of home anymore. They're always on you.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And you're like you said, you're seeing it in the data on the mental health, particularly in the middle school age females. That's where it's just going
to change. The bit that really upset me, because I have this I have this dream one day that Instagram will just call it a day and just go, we're deleting the app. Thanks for coming. Like they did Vine or whatever. And then all the Instagram models are going to go, what? And that's going to make me so happy.
TikTok,
because the way that you, that you're relying your whole income on someone else's app is fucking beyond me. Yeah. Anyway. But I found it from that show. They can't because they're owned by stockholders.
Yeah.
They can't even delete the fucking things because they're publicly owned by thousands and thousands of people.
Right, so they have a fiduciary responsibility to their owners.
They have to keep going. Mm-hmm. So we need someone to delete these apps.
You need a Teddy Roosevelt style coming in here and breaking them up. It's just the only solution.
There needs to be something needs to be done because kids fucking cutting themselves and committing suicide and all type of stuff. And it's like I, as someone who's famous or, you know, mildly famous or whatever the fuck I am, I had to stop looking at social media. I just stopped looking at it because it was just – the hate was getting to me. The people just saying I was crap or whatever was getting to me.
Yeah.
And I stopped it for about a good year almost. I didn't look at it for a whole year. And then I sort of just dipped my toe back in the water. And now I look at it very rarely and I have someone else who runs it for me and stuff like that. But, you know – It used to be you went to school and you didn't know if you were unpopular or if you were popular. You didn't know. You sort of went, well, I got me mates and people seem to like me and yeah, everything's okay. But now there's a number.
Yeah.
There's a fucking number that you can, you know, but what age do you reckon for social media? Because I'm thinking with my son, I'm thinking 16.
16 is good. And I think part of that, you should think about it like tobacco.
What do you mean?
We should relate to this.
Make him use all the social media in a wardrobe until he's.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like we should have the kind of understanding that it's really deleterious to our health.
Yeah.
And deal with it accordingly. My friends that are experts in this stuff, they let their kids have something like an hour a day, and it's all monitored.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so I'm having this weird existential thing. And then I thought to myself, I'm going to go back and I'm going to retrain as a surgeon. I'm going to become a surgeon.
You want
to
be a surgeon?
Out of the blue, because I'm so sick of the way the cognitive medical sciences are just – you can't make a living.
I'm thinking about retiring.
And then I had that thought. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm just done. Checking out. That's it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about retiring.
Well, that's the other thing. I don't know where to go with it. It's a weird feeling.
I took to COVID so well I enjoyed it so much. And everyone was ringing me up going, oh, can't wait to get back on stage. I love being on stage, but I'm like – I feel like I'm all right without it. I feel like – and that was my eighth special. And I thought – and I watched Paul McCartney bring out albums and no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
No one gives a fuck.
Right.
And we still love Paul McCartney. He still sells all the tickets, but no one gives a fuck.
That's true.
Because they've got all the stuff they need. And I feel like I've got another special in me. And then I think when I get to 9, it's like – is number 11 going to be an epiphany?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? So, and I don't want to go backwards in my career where I start going back to comedy clubs and stuff like that. I think it might be cool to say peace out. I'm not saying in the next year or so, but I'm saying within the next 5 years.
Right.
I might call it a day because I want to have another kid. And I missed a lot of my first child's childhood because I was on the road so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like, I don't know. I've invested well. I'm all right. You know, I don't know. Is that being a wuss or something?
No. Oh, no. It's one of the things that's the big gigantic – I have these huge splits in my head and that's one of my thoughts.
Yeah.
It's absolutely one of my thoughts. But I have this weird thing where I like if I'm not making a difference, I feel worthless. It's just my thing.
My fear is that I'll end up like what my mother did and I'll just lay on a couch and I won't move for 40 years. And so I got to find a hobby or something to do. But, you know, like I love stand-up comedy more than anything in the world and I just love it. But I also feel like it's not like I'm going to get better at it. I've already, I'm not going to write another gun control routine or whatever.
I have a feeling this Jeffries TV series might inspire you.
I don't want to give up on acting. I think acting, because like I know like they've just brought Eddie Murphy back to do stand up and they offered him $70 million or whatever the price was.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking hell. Does he want to do it or is he just like, I can't? and say no to
right. It's irresponsible to
it'd be irresponsible to you could donate future, it or something future, yeah, it's yeah. irresponsible yeah. to not do that. You got to yeah. do it yeah. you know, and so I don't know it's a lot of comics are going out and they're doing like these drive-in shows, and they're doing shows like where everyone's socially distanced in a field and all that type of stuff, and I'm like, it's just not stand-up to me. And I've done a couple of them. I think I don't want to go back and do it now unless it's ready to go. And, you know, there's an audience to actually interact with.
Well, let's leave it at that. I could have spent some time with you, man. I miss you.
No, man, always. But come and get stoned on my couch, man.
I'm going to do that. I haven't eaten or been exposed to cannabis since I was in college, like 19. Yeah, I know. Shocking.
It's legal now, you know.
I know that. And that's why I keep thinking, I got to try this stuff. It would be a perfect place for me to do it.
Your house
with a big TV and being on the back watching football.
We watch a bit of telly and we order some food and off we go.
Hot chicken. All right, buddy. So we watched the fourth Netflix special.
Intolerant.
Go check out Bear.
I got to say, Intolerant is my third best special. It's one story over an hour.
I laughed the whole time.
Oh, thanks.
Me
yeah.
too.
Yeah. And it's a laugh out loud kind of thing. Even if you're by yourself, you'll find yourself laughing.
And it's fascinating to explain to your friends what the premise of that story is. Like, no, it's an hour of him talking about. Yeah.
It's an hour of me talking about possibly shitting myself. That's the whole thing. And it's like.
And masterfully done.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.
See you, bye.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DRDREW Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.